Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. We're here to preview the second Ashes Test match at the GABA, the Pink Ball Test. But before we get into all of that fun stuff, I'd just like all of you to know that all of our shows and podcasts on the Good Areas Network are powered by our supporters on Patreon, and you can become one of them by going to patreon.com/Good Areas Podcast. That way you can enjoy ad-free content, you can talk to us exclusively, and you can give us podcast recommendations. So there's some somber news, Jared, to start off. Former England cricketer Robin Smith has passed on, so I thought that we'd just, you know, kind of mention that before we start previewing the test.
Do you know much about Robin Smith?
Not much. I know that he existed, and I know that he was a South African who played for England, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, he was part of that period of time where obviously, you know, you had Graham Hick and Alan Lamb and others who came over because it was just easier to play in county cricket and then try and play for England. Robin Smith was a fantastic batter who I think he's probably one of those guys who at times maybe his overall career didn't look as good because He didn't play Shane Warne particularly well. So he certainly had a bit of an issue there. But 62 test matches, averaging 44 in that era, was quite strong. Maybe struggled to get the hundreds that he needed to, but was just like a hammer on the offside. When he hit through point, you know, him and Gordon Greenidge in that era were just different. When they hit the ball through square on the offside, you couldn't give him any width. He would just absolutely drop an anvil on you if he did. A really, really high quality player in a struggling team as well. In England in that period, but, you know, very much a struggling team. He has had a lot of problems since retirement, you know, mental health problems. I think him and Rob Smythe wrote a book together, the great Rob Smythe. And I know he's did that. I want to say that I was at a training session in 10-11 Ashes. No, actually, it might have been 11-12. And he was there because he was in Perth at the Wacker. And he was, I think he was working for the helmet manufacturer at the time, or maybe he owns a share of that company. And I remember he had a bit of a breakdown at the nets a little bit, and really struggled. So I know he had a lot of things to struggle with after retirement, and really did. So it's really sad to see him pass at 62, but he was a fantastic test player for a few years there.
Yeah, I mean, if he's averaging 44 with the bat in 62 test matches or across 62 test matches for that England side, you know, which didn't win a lot, that does mean something. So our deepest condolences from everyone at Good Areas to Robin Smith's family, friends and loved ones. And we hope that he rests in peace. All right. Now, coming to the Ashes, there's one super chat that I'll take real quick by Jessica, who just says, keep up the good work. So thank you, Jessica. And you're a legend yourself.
Try.
Yeah, thanks for the money. And I mean, I don't know, Jared, we both previewed the Ashes and you mentioned, and I also agreed, that England really need to win the first test at Perth to stand a chance in this Ashes series. Not only did they lose the Perth test, they got obliterated within 2 days, and Australia chased down, 205 in 28.2 overs. Head goes absolutely berserk, and England are dealt a blow, which is the sort of blows that they want to deal to other people, right? That's the sort of damage that they like to inflict because they're the Baz bowlers, but they've been thumped by Trav Ball. So, I mean, it's a psychological blow as well. And I mean, Ben Stokes said he was shell-shocked. How do they recover from this? Like, forget getting smashed by Head. How do they recover from conceding a runner ball 50 by Manus?
Yes. I don't know. It's not good, is it? Look, I think they have to be realistic and say they probably didn't bat at their best in that first test match. And they bowled great in one innings and probably bowled poorly in the other one. So it's not like it was all a disaster, was it? It was, I think they have to be realistic. And I think they will be. They're a pretty positive side in that kind of way. The issue is, I don't think it's how they recover. It's how do they upset Australia in the pink ball game?
Yeah.
Right. Like, how do you actually get to a position in the pink ball game where, even if they'd won the first test, I'd be asking this of like, how do you work out how to do this? And maybe this allows England to be even more risky in the pink ball game of just being like, let's just play our shots and come up with some funkiness and see how it goes. But yeah, emotionally, I think they're a team that are actually this might sound weird, but I think they're better at probably handling losses than other sides. And part of that is the method that they go about it, and also that they accept failure in a way that other teams don't. Now, their fans might be like, they accept failure too much, and sometimes they promote failure.
Mm.
But that also does help them keep a more equal... They're like, yeah, we lost this test, but we've lost tests before. We'll be able to come back from this. The issue for me more is the fact that the pink ball game comes up and it's so different and they're not used to it and everything else. I think that's the issue that they're going to have.
Yeah, so you're basically the anti-Rob Barron, right? Because he went on a rant on good areas, which was very well received. But yes, I do believe that this is going to test England's character as much as it's going to test their skills. And like, I didn't give them the pink ball test prior to the Ashes as well. I thought they had their best shot at Perth, which they kind of squandered. But we've got some predictions from Rushline. Let's see what they have to say over here with respect to winning percentages. And Rushline thinks that Australia have a 68% chance to win the Gabba test, the pink ball test, and England are at a 17% chance. Not too sure about the 15% draw, because I don't think that's going to happen.
How much of that draw, let's say the draw is the one I think that, and remember, this is AI, it might be factory and things that we're not even thinking about at the moment. But let's say we don't use a draw and we take out rain. How much of that 15% goes to England and how much goes to Australia anyway?
I'm kind of feeling that 17% is too high for England as is, because only one team has ever defeated Australia in a pink ball test. Coincidentally, that was also at the Gabba. It was the West Indies.
Let's not forget that Pakistan game as well.
True.
I said Shafiq's masterpiece. Maybe his only masterpiece. I think that helps England. Like that, I do think that really does help. If you were playing this game 10 times in a row, with everything we know about these two teams, including the recent injuries, does England win one out of four or one out of five?
One out of five. Maybe not even that. Maybe one out of seven. Because England suck at pink ball tests, and they also said no to the practice game that was offered to them, right? Because they probably wanted to play some golf, drink some beers, smoke some cigars. Made Judge sneeze.
So, yeah, did. I think one out of five is fair with the fact that Australia's not got their full strength side either. And so there is definitely a chance. This is why I'm saying it may have been one out of four with Khawaja not playing. And which other Australian fast bowlers are not playing? I'm now lost of who's fit and who is not fit at the moment.
Three injuries for Australia. Cummins and Hazelwood haven't recovered, to my knowledge.
Yeah.
And then Usman Khawaja's back spasms continue to haunt both him and Australia.
So that it doesn't change the form. In fact, it might improve Australia's form, but it destabilizes them because they've been trying to find one opener. Now they're going to have to try and find two, and all these things are happening. But I think there are some issues there, and they might have to change the structure of their side. They might bring Webster in, bring Green back to number three, and Marnus opens. Which again, Marnus has just found form. You probably don't want him opening now, right? Regardless of that. They might bring Inglis in. Inglis isn't a natural opener. So there are definite issues that they have here. Having said that, it's just that the three players who are generally best with the pink ball for Australia, and I won't bring them up because I know Rushline has some predictions on them in a second, but all those players are available.
Yeah.
Right? And so that is an issue. In fact, should we just slide to them?
Yeah,
of course. Rushline has Mitchell Starc at 2+ wickets in the first innings. I would say this is the world's safest bet. I'm not Rob Barron. I don't bet on things like this, but I'm pretty sure that Rob Barron, if you said to him, Stark's going to take 2+ wickets, he's having any odds that you give him on that with the pink ball in the first innings. So let's just take that one as a given.
Hmm.
I think this is interesting as well. They've got Travis Head as plus 44 runs in that first innings. I think Travis Head and Marnus Labuschagne are the two best pink ball batters ever. I don't know what Steve Smith's stats are. I think they're pretty good as well. But I know that I'm pretty sure that Travis Head and Marnus both average over 50 in the pink ball games, right?
Damn.
So we talk about Starc and we forget about Marnus and Head and how well they pick the pink ball up and how much they like playing against it. So it's a lot more than that. This is the one I felt was interesting of Joe Root as plus 46. He hasn't played a lot of pink ball tests. I mean, he's played more than most other cricketers in the world just because he's played so many Ashes. But he hasn't, what's he played, maybe 5, 6, 7 pink ball games? I think he averages over 40 in them or around 40 in them. So it's interesting that maybe there's something in the data for him at the Gabba. that suggests that there's something there. I'm trying to remember, you know, how he's gone there. But again, rush line saying it's quite high. But I would think the other player I would be interested in would be Marnus, of where, you know, of those kinds of things as well. But it does show you that Australia has three genuine specialists when it comes to that ball. And England don't have a single specialist, right? No, sorry, three genuine specialists is the wrong way of putting it. Three worldies.
Yeah.
Who are specialists.
Essentially. Right?
And I just think that's so hard to overcome if you're the opposition. And if those were the injuries rather than the injuries we have, maybe I'd think a little bit differently. But that's the, even though it's destabilizing Australia and causing some issues, I personally am not too worried for Australia's chances just because of how good these players are. But having said that, you're still taking three really highly experienced talent players out, right? Like there is an element of, we don't know 100% how they're going to go because they shouldn't be as strong as normal. And in the first innings, no one was talking up the Australian bowling, were they?
Hmm. No, I mean, these are interesting sort of predictions or betting recommendations, I suppose. But I mean, Mitchell Starc taking 2+ wickets in any innings in a pink ball test, I mean, I'd bet my life savings on that. And this is a guy who took 10 out of 20 English wickets with the red ball in Perth. Imagine what he could do with the pink ball at the Gabba, because he is the pink pill pulverizer, right? So Starc is a separate conversation. I don't think we need to spend much more time on him. Head is fascinating. He has a fantastic pink ball record, but Jared, he might be opening in this game, right? Because Uzi Khwaja is injured with his back spasms, and Australia opened with Travis Head in that last innings at Perth. He smashed 123 off 83 balls. It's the second fastest Ashes 100 of all time and the fastest fourth innings 100 in Test history. I mean, that's a statement, right? And I'm not in favor of Head slotting in as opener in the long run, but in the interim, maybe it makes sense for him to open. Then do you lose a bit of that assurity with Travis Head batting against the pink ball?
Maybe. That's why I'm very nervous about doing it. It's funny, I had a conversation with my old man this morning. He's like, they can't open with Head. It's going to ruin him. Please don't do that. And there are plenty of other people who want Head at the top. So it is confusing. I think that's very, very fair at the moment, that it is confusing in which direction these things go. As I said, so I mean, Busker's put up this comment here. Let me just get out my notepad for a minute and just put this up.
Yeah,
You can obviously, Weatherald now is opening.
Yeah, so just for our audio listeners, Bhaskar has asked us what our predicted 11 is for Australia.
Yep.
Yeah, so I mean, there are a few ways they could go with this because you've got Josh Inglis.
So Weatherald obviously has to open, right?
Yeah.
But then you can have Inglis, you can have Head, or you can have Marnus opening the batting. Now, the plan was to have Marnus opening the batting a while back, and now he's back in form. I think they're like, maybe we don't need to. That's why Weatherald came in, I think, as much as anything. So if Inglis opens the batting, then there's no changes needed.
Yeah.
Right?
Essentially.
You roll out the same team, and Inglis just comes in for Uzi, and you hope it works.
Hmm.
Right? If Head comes in, right, Webster or Inglis have to come into the side as well. Right?
Yep.
And Green probably has to bat at 5 in that situation. Maybe Inglis could bat at 5. And then Webster obviously comes in at number 6, right? So again, there's a couple of changes. If they move Marnus to the top, right, that means that Head has to go from 6 to 3 and Webster has to come into that side. So there's no good answers. And this is what injuries do to you, right? There are no good answers here. And so it'd be really fascinating to see what they end up going with. I think I probably would go with Marnus or Inglis. Head's the one I don't want to move. I want Head to bat at number 5. I want Head to come in when the pink ball is soft, even if it's just a little bit soft, because he's so good against the pink ball. But I'm also nervous about moving Marnus because he's so good against the pink ball. So if you had to push me and I was working on the team, I think I would just bring Inglis in and just be like, well, Usman hasn't made any runs anyway.
Yeah.
So if Usman fails, if Inglis fails, nothing much has changed. And if Inglis comes off even in one innings, even for a cameo, that feels like a bonus to me. Also, it changes the Australian order a bit, right? Because it's a lot more attacking.
It is fascinating how, you know, Uzi Khwaja does his back after playing golf, which is a very English thing to do. And then he pisses off Cricket Australia by calling the Perth pitch a shit one. But I mean, of course, he's still not recovered. Otherwise, he'd be playing. But you're right. He's almost 39 years of age. he's clearly, you know, past his prime. And I mean, this was always going to be the end for him. We also thought that he might retire after the World Test Championship final, but they wanted to, you know, have him for the Ashes, and that communication was very clear. But I think you make sense in the sense that, you know, if you don't want to move Travis Head, then Inglis is the most obvious replacement for Uzi Khwaja. But from everything that I'm hearing and reading, I feel like they're very hell-bent on now opening with Travis Head in the pink ball game.
Seems like it.
And then what they could do is either you bring in an all-rounder in Bo Webster, who can give you cover with the ball as well, and he can get that pink ball to nip around. Bo Webster obviously was unlucky to miss out on the Perth test because he took 8 wickets in the Shield game prior and also scored runs in the List A game. And he hasn't really put a foot wrong, you know, when he's worn a baggy green. He's had a tremendous record thus far. But then you are compromising a bit in your batting, which Josh Inglis could solve. And Josh Inglis does play the short ball really well. And square of the wicket, he's really good. And even behind the wicket. So he does give you a bit of an X factor. And if they do choose to open with Head, maybe Inglis could do a Head at number 5, in theory. No?
Yeah. So, no, I'm just going through it now. Okay, I've got a team for you.
Okay.
This is a little bit wild. Okay, I don't think they'll do this. But let's say they do want to open with Travis Head, right? So Jake and Travis open, Marnus at 3, Smith at 4, okay? At 5, Inglis.
Yeah.
Right? At 6, Green. At 7, Webster.
Ooh.
At 8, Carey. And frontline Seamus.
Oh, so you're basically not playing Nathan Lyon at the gap. I mean, I can fuck with that, honestly, because I feel like with the pink ball, Australia seamers are expected to do really well. Scotty Boland also has a good record. Stark is the best pink ball bowler in history. And here's the interesting one. There are two options, right, for you when it comes to the third frontline seamer. If we go with this, you could go with either Brendan Doggett, who did all right at Perth. I mean, he takes 5 wickets in that game, but
a couple of good spells and some poor spells, I would say, as well.
Or we could fulfill Bharat Sundaresan's wet dream and play Michael Neeser.
They could. In fact, you could play Carey. You keep Carey at 7 and you bring Neeser in at 8. And you're still basically doing what I'm doing. You're not quite giving yourself as strong a batting lineup, but as I am. The problem with Neeser is, do you want... That means that Boland... Because Boland and Stark have to get the new ball. So one of them is... So Stark's not going to miss out. It means that Boland doesn't get the new ball, is my guess, if that's the situation. And, you know, what's the... does that matter? Does it not matter? And everything else. But Neeser definitely needs the new ball. By the way, Boland has 18 wickets, an average of 13 in a day-night test. But I just looked that up while we were there. So, yeah, I think Neeser's a possibility. Is Neeser still in the squad, though?
Yeah.
Or was he released? He is. I was trying to remember who the extra guy was still.
I'm not quite sure how potent he would be with the pink ball, though. But you're right about the new ball bit.
Yeah. So if you've got... The other reason Neeser... This is the interesting thing about Neeser, is that he actually works a lot for Australia at the moment. Partly because Cameron Green and Bo Webster, let's say Cameron Green and Bo Webster are in the same side as him, and maybe you can't fit both, but even if you just have one, they can do some of the old bowling stuff that Neeser is not as good at. And also, if the ball keeps nipping around, Neeser's a new ball bowler is handy. Like in some of these Australian pitches, the ball hasn't stopped moving all that much. So old bowling doesn't matter as much. But yeah, I think they can, if they're worried about their batting because of, you know, having to have Travis at the top or Inglis at the top or whatever, they can actually boost their batting, I suppose, is what the point you and I are trying to make here. If you have Carey or Neeser at 8, that is a much stronger side than you batting lineup than you went in with the last game. And I think that might be something that they will look at as well. And if Lyon's not going to bowl, you kind of might as well bowl Webster, right?
Yeah. Also, I mean, if you really want overs of spin, Webster can give you those as well, right? I mean, he's
quite
flexible that way, or versatile.
No, I mean, honestly, I can't remember the numbers. I did this for The Cricketer. I might try and do a feature on it for our channel. But if you look at it, the amount of overs of spin that Lyon is bowling every year in Australia is decreasing. A lot of people are like, oh, he's getting older. It's like, there's no chance to bowl him because everyone's already been bowled out. So If I went into a test match thinking, I think at the moment Lyon bowls about 25 to 26 overs per test match, right? In the last 2 or 3 years. I think I'm right. I might have misremembered those numbers. But it's certainly way down on the old days when he was over, you know, 35, 40. If that's the case, can I not just get 18 out of Webster?
I think you could.
Yeah, and I'm talking just as off spin. Plus, Webster can give you a little bit more. You've also got Cameron Green who can bowl at the moment. Travis Head can bowl a couple of overs if you want to try something different, you know. So they, I think they can do that if they want to.
Yeah. Anyway, more on that. But before that, we'll be taking a short break. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Bairam and Jared. And go nowhere because we will be back in like half a minute.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Bairam and Jared, and we are currently previewing the pink ball test at the Gabba, which starts on Thursday. All right, so based on what we've talked about thus far, three of Australia's peak performers with the pink ball, worldies almost, Travis Head, Mitch Stark and Manus Labuschagne. All three are in form. They downed England at Perth, especially Head and Stark. And that's an obvious advantage Australia have. But the balance of the team is kind of, you know, in flux. And it could either work, yeah. It could not. We're not sure what the correct answer is. Of course, Varun with a very fun comment in over here says, Jared in his Gautam Gambhir era, slotting in Webster at 8. So that's a fantastic observation. I feel like, ultimately,
I think very differently about Webster than other people do. I think everyone else thinks he's like a test batter. I think he's probably a number seven.
Yeah.
Right.
But like, he's a very good number seven.
But yeah, good number seven. Hmm. I don't think he's a consistent long-term number six. And so batting him at number eight to me is, it's fine. Like, do you know what I mean? Like it's okay.
We don't really know how many overs or how long spells Cam Green can bowl right now because you don't want to break him again. So there's another, you know, reason to play Bo Webster if need be.
Exactly. And also, if the ball is nipping around, like you've got another tall seamer you can do stuff with. You know, Bo Webster just gives you the ability to drop Nathan Lyon, right? Yeah. And this is not a form thing with Nathan Lyon. It's just, is he going to bowl that much? Hilariously, England have picked a spinner, so they are planning to have a spinner in their side. So, I don't know, maybe I'm misreading all of this from a long way away.
Yeah, well, if I talk about predicted 11, I think they're going to open with Head and Weatherald. Then they'll go Manus at 3, Smith at 4. Inglis at 5, I feel like they're going to play Nathan Lyon over here, right? I don't think they're going to drop him for some reason because they played him at Perth as well. So if Inglis is at 5, Green is at 6, and then at 7 you've got Carey, then you can have your three frontline seamers and Nathan Lyon. I wouldn't do that. I'm more aligned with you over here. I'd sacrifice Gazza. I'd play both of Inglis and Webster. And then I'd see how I feel about opening with Head. Because, I mean, if I have to sacrifice a batter up top, it'd rather not be Travis Head because he's so phenomenal versus the pink ball, especially when it's soft. So, I mean, Australia could go a couple few ways over here. Let's see what they ultimately end up doing. England are also quite fascinating. Mark Wood is injured. We talked about this, how it's highly unlikely that Mark Wood would remain fit throughout, you know, this test series, and it's happened rather early. There was a fun headline somewhere that England are replacing Wood with Tongue. So
now, wasn't it like floppy Wood?
Yeah.
It was a good, I've forgotten the pun as well now, but
yeah, it was a really good
someone
pun.
Had really done a lot of work on that and we've now ruined their joke absolutely entirely.
Wood flops for England and they're replacing him with Tongue, something like that.
England to use Tongue as Wood flops. Is the exact one. I don't know who came up with that. I think it was just someone on Twitter, wasn't it? But yeah, great effort to whoever came up with that.
Also, I mean, clearly Mark Wood was, psychologically impacted because he wanted to drive from Perth to Brisbane after that test match ended. I'm not sure if you caught that headline. But it is a blow because he's obviously express pace, 150 clicks plus easily. Like that spell on day one that he bowled was really, really tough to face, and it was fast bowling at its finest. But now let's assume that England do play that spinner that they seem like they might, right? Because that's the headline that I read yesterday, that they've got Shoaib Bashir and Will Jax bowling to Ben Stokes, and either of those could feature. With Jax, you're not getting as many overs of spin, but you're getting an extra batter. And with Bashir, I'm not sure, like, the high release point, is that like a strong suit is that strong enough to kind of slot him in a pink ball test?
Well, Will Jax has the same release point, though, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he does, but he can also bat, whereas Bash cannot yeah. bat.
Yeah. I thought if Bashir was going to play, Perth was probably one of the more likely places for him to play, but it was hard because they had so many fast bowlers who were suited to that. But just because if you're going to pick the guy because he bounces the ball, you pick him where it bounces the most. Mm. I think they're thinking about it the same way I'm thinking about Bo Webster, which is the chances are the spinner is not going to make a big impact on this game, right? And so if the spinner's not going to make a big impact, what you really want is someone who can give you some all-round flexibility. And then, you know, they've got four frontline seamers anyway because of the way of Stokes's recent form, right?
Yeah.
So they're not really missing out on that. So I think that probably makes sense. I wouldn't have picked Bashir for a test match in Australia. I just don't think he's going to make as much. He's not very good at keeping the runs down, which traditionally you have to be good at in Australia. And while the bounce and everything is fine, and I think he would have got a couple of catches to leg slip, I just think he would have got hammered along the lines too many times and they would have felt uncomfortable using him.
Yeah. Speaking of catching, of course, if Australia do play...
But you know England have announced their 11, though.
Oh, they have announced their 11?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, I did not know. I
should have pointed that.
I was just thinking about...
It's just Will Jackson for Wood.
Oh, okay. So they did not go with Bashir then. Okay, that makes sense to me because, again, if
that's why I wonder why you were talking about it, but I was also trying to do two other things at the same time.
Yeah, no. I had no idea they'd announced their 11, actually. So I think that's actually a good pragmatic call. You get an extra batter in Will Jackson. You don't expect him to bowl a lot of overs because Stokesy is going to bowl 10 over long spells. We know that about him. Even with, like, you know, a fragment of a knee, he can manage to do that. And... I don't know, Football FC says, wasn't it Wokes who wanted to drive from Perth to Brisbane? I read a Guardian article or just the headline. It had something to do with Mark Wood and driving to Brisbane from Perth.
I mean, I would have assumed that it's more likely to be Wood than Wokes. But let's just say it was definitely an England bowler starting with W and leave it at that.
Yeah. Anyway. So, okay, that's fascinating. Where do you bat Will Jax now? Is he the fail-safe batter after all the other batters? Or does he slot into like a number five role? Because they're going to have Ollie Pope at three, right?
Yeah, no, he bats at eight, doesn't he?
Does he? That's a bit too low, no?
You're not going to have... Well, who are you going to move to eight? Smith.
True. You got to have Jamie Smith ahead of him. Maybe Stokesy at eight?
I mean, and I know we've talked about this a bit. I think you and I have talked about it. I've talked about it with Harmy as well. Of like, there is a possibility in the future, if Stokes keeps bowling the way he is, that he could bat at seven or eight, right?
Yeah.
But I doubt they're going to do it here.
Okay, so they've basically not gone with the tongue option. Made myself chuckle over there. But yeah, I'm not sure if, you know, Gus Atkinson makes a lot of sense for a pink ball test. Maybe they should have had tongue ahead of him. Because Kaas, I can see, do well. Jofra is going to be the X factor. Gus is more gets to seam the ball off the deck, and then there's that scrambled seam delivery that he bowls.
Yeah, I would have thought I'm not saying he's going to take wickets in the pink ball test, but he's more likely to hit the seam with the pink ball than Tongue is, isn't he? So I would use Atkinson over Tongue in that. If they're going to use Tongue, I think Tongue probably makes more sense MCG later on in the series. And Tongue might have to just come in for Wood at different times. But no, it's funny, actually. Bumble picked Atkinson for most wickets, and we were talking about it off air when we were chatting the other day, and he said his big worry was they might not pick Atkinson again. So Wood being injured is probably allowed for Atkinson to play one more game. I think this is the game where if he bowls as well as he did in the first innings in Perth, he's going to get wickets with the pink ball. Like, he would be unlucky not to, but he could still be dropped for the next test. Right. Like, I think that's also a possibility, unless he takes a huge bag. Just because, you know, him or Kaas, one of them's going to miss out soon. Right. Also, I don't think you need Kaas and Tongue in the same side unless you're playing at somewhere like the Wacker. Like, I think they're too similar. I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I have been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Also, speaking of long batting lineups, they all bat. England, Right till 11.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's definitely going to help them.
So what, Jofra's the worst bat in this side, and then what? Who bats at 10? Is it Atkinson?
Yeah. No, Kaas probably. I think they'd probably feel more confident with Atkinson at 9, given that he's got a test 100 at Lords.
I can't remember. I think they've switched in the order before, haven't they? Or maybe I'm just mistaken. But yeah, so if it's Kaas or Atkinson. Didn't Atkinson bat 10, or did he bat 9 in the...
I can't quite remember.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, but either way, it's a very, very long batting lineup. You're right.
Yeah, that could help them. And the thing where I was kind of leaning towards Stung is that I know that Atkinson overall is the more reliable bowler and probably even more skillful bowler. But Tung's best ball is a really good fucking ball, isn't it? Like, that could really trouble you.
No, it is. I think if this was a non-pink ball game, I would have been interested in bringing Tung in. But I think once it's a pink ball game, you probably, if you look... You know, you probably want someone who can get a little bit more out of the ball. And not that Atkinson moves it massively. But, I mean, he's like, if there's anything on the surface or the ball's doing anything crazy, he's probably, you know, your best bet to be able to get something out of. So I just think this is the one that you kind of have to use him in. I know he didn't get a wicket in the first test, and I'm sure there are plenty of people who are like, he should be dropped and everything else. But I don't think there's anything that suggests that, like, he was that bad in that particular game that he needed to be dropped, right? So from my perspective, I wouldn't be that worried about that at all. So yeah, I would have gone with Atkinson here.
Fair enough. So interesting. Now England have as long a batting lineup as they could have hoped for, and let's be real, like, their most important bowler after Jofra is probably going to end up being Ben Stokes anyway, given the way he's been bowling recently, right? And I'm banking on him because I want him to kind of push for that leading wicket taker spot, and that way I can beat you, even though you've gone with the safest bet in the world in Mitch Stark. So
by the way, I think that's another interesting part of it. So I've just got the batting records up here of now I've lost them, of course. Yeah, so Labuschagne averages 64 against the pink ball.
Damn.
Heads 51. Smith averages 37. Khawaja was 36. Root is 38.5. But Mitchell Stark averages 24 with the bat against the pink ball.
Wow. That's insane. He loves these day-night tests.
Yeah, so... So Australia probably even get a little bit of a boost with him with the bat as much as anything. Ben Stokes averages 20 in the pink ball games.
Yikes.
I think I'm right in saying. And I'll just try, let me just bring up the bowlers quickly just to see, because I've got a feeling that he's not particularly, where are we here? So Mitchell Stark, 81 wickets at 17. Pat Cummins also takes these wickets at 17, by the way.
Wow.
Nathan Lyon takes these wickets at 26. Hazelwood takes his wickets at 18. Boland takes his wickets at 13. Let me just find. Remember, everyone has a good record. Even if.
And Australia in their history have lost like a solitary pink ball test. So
at the Gabba, in a bit of
against
a.
England.
So Stokes, here we go. I thought I was right on this. Stokes has 5 wickets in 6 games, an average of 58.
Bloody hell.
Right. Now, there's a reason for that. Stokes is a really good red ball bowler. He's not a really good white ball bowler.
I think
he struggles with the pink ball. Now, he's in better form now than he's probably ever been with his bowling at any stage in his career. So, yes, that could change things massively. But you can certainly see my point there, that it's, that's not something that is ideal, I don't think, for... them.
Plus, all the batting records for Australia versus the pink ball are way better than England's. But then again, you know, when you're batting till 11 and you've got like that sort of team where someone comes off and he can completely, you know, kind of disrupt the plans of the opposition team. I mean, this could be the Crawley game. We're going to have one Crawley test match, right, in this Ashes?
Maybe. you're right. It could be. But I think the other way of putting it is that England are really good in these sort of chaotic games quite a lot. Right.
Yeah.
When there's a lot of nonsense going on. Pink ball games usually have more chaos.
Yeah.
As you said, they've got lots of bowling options, they've got lots of batting options. All these things are possible. It's just that even with the injuries to Australia, just has so many people who love the pink ball specifically. And England just does not have that.
True. And well, England also have pressure. Or they are under a lot of pressure because they've lost the first test and they've been blasted by the media, both home and away. And now they need to come up trumps and show some character. And if they lose this test match, surely that's it for the Ashes. It ends before it even starts, right? I mean, nowhere are they coming back once again after being 2-0 down.
I think it would be pretty hard to come back from 2-0 down in Australia, right? Like at home, you can make that argument that it's at least possible. I can't imagine. Australia is, I think I was talking to Robbie about this the other day where I said, Australia are probably, like everyone talks about their fight and their grit and everything, but actually at their heart, they're at their best at being front runners, right? Hmm. Once they're in front, they lift themselves in a way that other teams just don't. And so it's so hard to get back, especially if they get 2-0 up and one of Hazelwood or Cummins comes back, right? Like true. Hazelwood looks less likely. Cummins, I was still thinking that the third test was where he was going to play his first game. Like you bring one of those guys in for Doggett, you know,
yeah,
good luck.
Things could change violently. Also, I feel like two things that might really end up mattering in this test match. Of course, I'm not trying to ignore Australia's record in pink ball tests, but look, they have lost at the Gabba before to a West Indian team, which they never should have lost to. And I feel like pink ball test matches really bring the toss into play as well. You don't want to be batting in the evening session. So if you get to bat first, that helps you. And I feel like there are a lot more chances in pink ball tests than red ball tests. So I feel like whichever of these two teams makes the lesser of mistakes in this test might win. Like Australia have Green and Webster at third slip and gully, so that might be a bit of a stretch for England, and they drop a lot of catches. But it might all come down to whoever makes less mistakes in this, because I feel like even though Australia are favourites, England, in theory, if you think about it, could, like if they win some key moments, they could push for victory over here.
England's best chance in this particular test is for it to be a messy match.
Yes.
Right? Where there isn't as many runs scored. Hmm. It's a bit chaotic. Maybe a Will Jacks comes in at 8 and smacks a 60 or something, you know, or Atkinson or Carson again get going. That's their best chance of winning this game, is if it's that kind of game. I think if Head or Marnus can make runs and make it a more normal game, I think that's where England are going to struggle, just because Australia has so much more experience and England just don't play with the pink ball.
Yeah, and right? They didn't, like, want to play the practice, I think, someone game either.
Rishikesh has said here, you know, will Jofra be dangerous with the pink ball, as his white ball record is great? I would assume that Jofra Archer will probably prefer to bowl with the pink ball than the red ball. I think he's a fantastic red ball bowler, but because of injuries, he's never really got a long enough run to sort of get comfortable. But I don't know what he would bowl like with the pink ball. Hmm. I would say it should suit him. But at the moment, my bigger issue with Jofra is he again, doesn't look like he has a lot in the tank. He looks like he can bowl one or two really good spells and then struggles a little bit. Hmm. Again, if it's a short test match, that's not going to matter. But if Marnus and Head put the runs on like they have before with the pink ball, suddenly that matters a lot more. And so, again, there are all these things that are sort of weighted against England.
Even if it's a very, very short test, that doesn't go in Joff's favour, because he has to bowl on both days consecutively, and he lost quite a bit of steam on day two at Perth, right? So that is a concern. But I'm expecting him to kind of deliver the goods. Let's see. For me, Australia are strong favourites. I never imagine England to beat them over here. But just because I want this Ashes to be interesting, I'm hoping against hope that England can surprise us. That's where I'm at, really.
Yeah, I mean, if you're neutral, you have to be cheering for England here, because otherwise it's done, right? And also, like, we've had so many of these one-sided Ashes in Australia. Even when England won in 10-11 was one-sided, right? We haven't had a series that is kind of interesting since 86-87, and the quality of the cricket in 86-87 was probably a little bit poorer. We probably haven't had two really good sides go up against each other since 70-71, where, you know, England had a chance and Australia had a chance. And if Australia get on top, as I said before, I just expect them to steamroll, right? And a lot of people might have Schadenfreude over baseball and everything else, but it's going to be three more shit test matches after that. So one way or another, you kind of hope that England does something. Just as I said before, this test is played 5 times. Yeah. If England win one of them, they've done well. So maybe this is the one. Perhaps. You said 1 out of 7. Mm. So, you know, let's see.
Yeah, I mean, if they've lost 1 out of 14, Australia, then giving 1 out of 7 to England is me being generous to them. But, you know, ultimately, on a closing note, I suppose my mind says Australia through and through. I think Australia might just pulverize England in this test match. But my heart is saying that England just might pull something off over here that will surprise all of us. But then the heart often has us fooled anyway. Okay, then. You guys let us know what your predictions are for the GABA test as well in the comment section below, and whether you think that England have got their 11 right, and what you think Australia should come up with as their 11. That's a wrap for this episode of Good Areas Live. Just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be a one-stop shop for you with respect to all the fun work that we do as part of our team, whether it be written content, videos, or podcasts. And of course, as I mentioned at the start, all of our shows on the Good Areas Network are powered by our supporters on Patreon. You can become one of them by going to patreon.com/Good Areas Podcast. And that way you can enjoy ad-free content, you can talk to us exclusively, and you can give us podcast recommendations. Have a good one, folks. Enjoy the Pink Ball GABA test as we will. And we'll see you soon enough. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Baram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.